The darkness of the human heart. Does that sound familiar? Were you here last week? We were told that the heart is wicked and deceitful. And there's a sense in which we should tremble at the capacity of our heart to have dark secrets in it. We have a new heart from God, but the old hostility doesn't reign anymore, but it does remain. And one book I've been reading recently describes the capacity of the heart with that hostility still within us to be like a fictional haunted house. Every room is full of darkness and surprising secrets. Now, if we just stick with that thought, you would probably become paralyzed with fear. How could I possibly live the Christian life when the potential of my heart and my mind is like that? How could I possibly be of use in serving God? How could I possibly live the Christian life in a way worthy of the gospel? John, as an old man, writes a letter to the church, and he assures the church that God is greater even than our hearts. And with those gentle words, I would encourage you, that's why we're looking at Psalm 139, to help us be confronted gently but firmly that God is greater than our hearts. Sometimes our hearts work with our mind. The biblical heart is everything about you. The mind. And thoughts come in. You don't want them, but they're there. And if we're honest, we can be horrified by the thoughts that we think. And we are glad that our nearest and dearest don't know. Sometimes it's not our minds, it's our choices. We know what is right. We can think it through to its logical conclusion, but we still choose what is wrong. Sometimes it's our choices that we make. The will in action. We know what's right, but we choose what's wrong. Other times, it's our, what some others have called in the past, our affections, our longings, our desires. It's bigger than emotions, but includes emotions. Our longings and desires. And sometimes they are sweet, and we can imagine nothing better than being a Christian. And at other times, we just love other things. And at other times, we hear the voice of our conscience speaking, convicting, and we're somehow able to muffle it over. To put our hand over its mouth. Shh. And we just carry on. Now, we're not like that all the time. Are we? But we do know some of that darkness, don't we? And we are glad that we don't wear our hearts on our sleeves, aren't we? But I want to assure you, Christian, that you are not just known, because that's a frightening thought, but you are known by a God who, in his knowing of you, keeps you secure. We are glad that others don't know what goes on in here and in here, aren't we? Because we fear, ultimately, we fear if they knew, they would reject us. They wouldn't want to be my friend. They'd probably think I'm not fit to be in the church. But here is knowledge of us. Complete, total, and security. There is no fear that we are known by this God. Because we are told that he hems us in. His hand is upon us, not to rebuke and give us a hard time, but to hold us fast. So we're going to look at this psalm. And I hope that as we do, you enjoy exploring the completeness of your God. You enjoy being reminded of what your God is like. One of my fondest memories of being at university is actually going home and being able to arrive home. This is the home that we grew up in as boys, and it's still there, it's still the same, largely. And what we used to do is just walk around the house, just to enjoy the fact that it was still the same. The bed was still comfortable, and the sheets were clean. What a difference from university. The doors were safe and the locks worked. What a difference from university. You open the fridge, there's food. What a difference from university. And just enjoyed being able to explore. Well, this psalmist writes truths that should help us just enjoy these truths. Enjoy being known. Enjoy being secure. David wants us to know, as he's discovered and is articulating himself, he wants us to know that we are known by God. That's quite simple, isn't it? O Lord, you have searched me and known me. And far from taking flight, he's secure. And he explores that. You know the phrase, count your blessings? That's a good practice, isn't it? And when we do it, it's healthy to the soul. But David goes beyond counting. He explores his blessings. He meditates upon them. It's really helpful. The Psalms are filled. There are some Psalms that are laments, utter cries to God. I don't think we do that very well, do we? Nor do we do this exploring of God's blessings to us. That's what he does. You've searched me, you've known me. And he goes off a little explore of how well known he is. You know my sitting down and my rising up, my actions. You understand my thought afar off. Now that is something else, because you and I don't understand our thought patterns sometimes. But God understands. He understands. He understands our thoughts from afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down. You understand why sometimes I don't desire, and other times I could do nothing but desire you. You understand the way I take. For there's not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. Isn't that wonderful? Everything we say is known, not just heard, but known. There's an understanding here. Verse 5 is wonderful. You've hedged me behind and before, and you've laid your hand upon me. I am secure, I am safe. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's high, I cannot attain it. He's lost in adoration, isn't he? He's exploring the dimensions of God's knowledge. And he's run out, hasn't he? Notice this. Especially if you fear that you are being overlooked by God. You may not express it in that way. Does God know what I'm going through? Does he really understand? Does he know the fears and the anxieties? Does he know the circumstances and the effect of those? Look how many me's and my's, personal pronouns, that are in those verses. Let me read them again. You can count them if you like. You don't have to, but just get the idea of how well known David personally is known, and every child of God is known. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off, and you comprehend my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You have hedged me behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. This is a personal, isn't it? Do you sense that? Christian, from top to toe, you're known inside out. All your foibles, all your failures, all your weaknesses, everything. And he's still keeping you safe. Now, could it be that some of us are deliberately holding out on God? Could it be that we're staying away, just even a little? Why would you stay away from God like that? To whom would you run when you choose to move away from him? What else have you got, Christian? Whatever else you do this week, make sure that you stay close to this God. We are known, and he is near. Okay, verses 7 through to 12. He is near. David isn't trying to flee. It's not a Jonah put into words here. He's not trying to run away. He's just enjoying the fact that he can't go anywhere where God is not. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? And again, he answers the question that he sets himself up, and he just appreciates the answer. He's counting his blessing and exploring the blessing. He picks all the dimensions he can possibly think of. Heaven, you're there. Hell, you're there. There's nowhere I can go without you being there. If I take the wings of the morning, Israel has a west coast. If I take the wings of the morning from the east, as you look at it, and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, you're there. From the beginning of the day to the end. Take your pick anywhere in the middle, you're there. And it's not just present, is it? It's not just that he's near. Look at verse 10. Even there, your hand shall lead me. Your right hand shall hold me. The word shepherd is not used there. But that's the sort of picture. Shepherding, being led and held. Psalm 23 comes to mind, doesn't it? Safe. Your right hand shall hold me. So it's not just that God is present, near, wherever we go. He's holding us wherever we go. Even darkness. Speak to children, not just children. Often darkness holds the greatest fear, isn't it? Why? Unknown. Something may be there. But night and light are just the same. I could try and hide in darkness, but it doesn't mean a thing to you. And we saw this morning he spoke into the darkness, spoke light into darkness. The darkness and the light are both alike to you. Nowhere to hide. Always God is near. Some of you will go home to families and you will have a hard time. Possibly for being here, possibly for being in this church or another church, possibly for taking your faith seriously. It'll be hard. Maybe parents, your children, are giving you a hard time. Could be the other way around, couldn't it? Children, your parents are giving you a hard time. It could be spouses, siblings. could be work colleagues. What did you do on the weekend? I went to church twice. You what? Well, I know that's not the only thing you did on the weekend, but it should come out. And we can get the impression that when we go into a hostile home or a hostile workplace, that somehow we are increasingly on our own. But you're never alone, Christian. Wherever you go, God's Spirit is there, not just present, but holding you. You're safe, secure. So God knows us, and He is near to us always, wherever we are. It could be the case that you know someone who is struggling, fearful with their ideas of God. Maybe you bump into someone this week, or maybe have a conversation that somehow they want a relationship with God, and it just doesn't seem to be happening. Or they're fearful that God has cut them off completely. You could take them to these words. Look what God is like. Let me read to you how He knows you inside out. Let me show you. Look at those words. Verse 10, He leads you. And right hand will hold you. That's not the God who cuts people off. That's not the God who forgets or doesn't listen to prayer. Let this passage, perhaps this week or in the weeks ahead, be your help as you stand alongside others. He knows us. We are known and He is near. Why? What expert knowledge? Where does that come from? The church copier is playing up. And those who use it on a regular basis have had a headache over the last few weeks. We try to get it fixed. It is fixed. It's not fixed. It is fixed. Not fixed. Absolute nuisance. Some of us who are not expert in these things have had a poke and a hoke and a play. No good at all. Okay, not being able to fix it one little bit. But that's because we don't understand the machine. There is a guy on the end of the telephone, a guy called Jeff. Jeff, can you come and look at the machine for us? He knows what he's doing. He could take the thing apart and reassemble if he had to. Expert knowledge. Where does God's expert knowledge come from? Verse 13. For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Expert knowledge comes from the very fact that your life depends upon Him. That means that God is no late authority arriving into your life. You exist because He permits. You breathe because He allows. You've been born because He's designed you and put you together. This expert knowledge that's made every little part of you is the expert knowledge that is in operation when you go wherever you go to, and He's there with you. Where you think whatever you think, when you fear whatever you fear, and you dream and hope for whatever you dream and hope for, and He knows you inside out. He's put you together, that's why. It's expert knowledge. And again, David rejoices in the fact that he is created, put together. Just listen to the words. I praise you, verse 14, for I'm fearfully, wonderfully made. That fearfully phrase. Trembling with astonishment. I don't know about you, but I don't do that really when I think about being made. Perhaps we should. Perhaps you should marvel. Tremble with astonishment at how well we're made. Not because we're beautiful, but because we're astonishing. Wonderful. Wonderful creations. and that my soul knows very well. Here is a creature singing to his creator from the very depths of his being. My soul knows that very well. To deny that you were created, to deny that you have a creator who has done things wonderfully, is foolishness. And to marvel at what he has done, oh, that is wisdom. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret, skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. You see the description? He's not just stating it. He's not just counting his blessings. I'm created. He's exploring the enjoyment of just how much detail was involved in God knitting us together. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. Some of you have seen copies of the scans of ladies when they have a child in their womb. And many have been brought to tears. It's an emotional time, whether you're a grandparent or an aunt or even a friend. But the detail, the intricacy of what you can see. But here there's something beyond that. Previous that your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. Before a machine can take a picture of the child that's in the womb, before that stage, your eyes saw my substance. And in your book, they were all written, the days fashioned for me. Do you see? Created to exist. And every single one of the days that you've lived has been written by God. Even before they happened. Here is expert knowledge. You're wonderfully made. And I'm not trying to boost your egos or your self-esteem. Far from it. This should cause us to bow in sweet surrender to a great creator. We are made wonderfully well. And this God who makes us, like this morning, you know, in him was life. This idea we have life because he gives. And we've seen already from what he's gone before that it's not just a creating and a leaving us to it. We are known and he is near because he was there at the very, very beginning. One man, a man called Eugene Peterson, he's a gentleman who's written the Message Bible translation, very helpful if you want a fresh perspective on the truths of God's word. He says this, in the presence of birth, we don't calculate, we marvel. Don't we? Some of you will remember Nora Miles. He used to be in the church, worked as a midwife, and she spoke to me a number of times of when she was present at a birth, she would often, as regularly as she could, offer a Bible to the new parents and offer to pray. And she said no one ever refused. Why? Because they appreciated that in the birth of a child, something special was happening. It's not just physical flesh and blood. There's something special happening. And David is enjoying that. Enjoying his history before his days were known by anybody else other than God. Is it any wonder he gets to verse 17? How precious are your thoughts to me, O God. Created, sustained, shepherded, held on to, known inside out. How precious. Now you and I can do, words have changed over the years and precious can sound a little bit like nice and cute. But when scripture uses the word precious, it's a bit like the word glory. There's a weight, there's a significance. It meant how precious, how valuable your thoughts are. It's not, oh, that's nice, God. It's wow. God, that is amazing. How precious also your thoughts to me. How great is the sum of them. It's not just the caliber of the thoughts, how you put together. It's also how many of the thoughts that God is having about you. How he does that for you, me, and everybody else around the world, I have no idea. But I want you to be comforted by this, Christian. That when you are tempted to think that God is mindful of you some of the time, or only about some of your life, how great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would be more in number than the sand. Go down to the beach. Cup two hands of sand. And just marvel. Forget counting. Just marvel. My God thinks. Drop those. Pick up others. My God thinks. Drop those. Pick up. You stay there all day if you want. My God thinks like that. That's wonderful. This is not egotistical. This is not us building ourselves up. This is God revealing to us how precious we are to him. How mindful he is of us. I love this phrase, verse 18. When I awake, I am still with you. Is that wonderful? If ever scripture balances the weakness of the humanity and the majesty and the might and strength of God, it's that, isn't it? When I'm asleep, I have to sleep. Some of you are awful when you don't get sleep. I know there's going to handle a lack of sleep for a few days, and then you're awful. We need our sleep. We're dependent upon it. When we're at our weakest and frailest and we sleep to recover, we wake up and God is still there. And he is still the same. And he is still with us. Nothing changes. Warren Wiersbe comments that when Adam went to sleep, he woke up and Eve was there. Well, that may not happen, okay? But God will be there, okay? He doesn't change. He doesn't change. Always the same. When I awake, I am still with you. Do you sense the enjoyment of the security that David is having? You sense it? The weight of the truths that he's exploring in appreciation of God. Verse 19 to 22 kind of sticks in the throat. If you read this out loud, you kind of wish it wasn't there. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Where did that come from? God has declared in his word that he hates the wicked, those who stand against him and stand against him and stand against him. And David here is aligning himself with God. Because you form my inward parts, because you know me completely, because you're near me always, because I love you, I'm on your side, God. And it's evidence as well that this psalm was not written on a summer holiday, secluded somewhere, just enjoying a reflective break. It's written in the cut and thrust of tough life. You just need to read through the life of David to realize there was rarely a picnic. It was hard days. Sometimes his own son threatened his life. Others, many other people wanted a piece of him. This man doesn't write out of a limited experience. And so these truths of being known by God, of God being near us, of God knowing us completely because he's made us, and us feeling secure in that knowledge, is applicable in the rough and cut of every single day. No matter, Christian, what the darkness of your heart hides. No matter what circumstances come in, these truths are for every day. They're not your Sunday best clothes. They're your overalls. It's your apron. If you wear an apron, gentlemen. You put them on every day. And I would urge you to hem yourself in with these truths, that you would know that you're hemmed in by God. He hates those. Verse 21. Do I not hate them, O Lord, who hate you? He's taking sides with God in a hostile world. Sound familiar? And he's glad to be God's. We can read verses 19 to 22 with a vindictiveness. But that's not the point at all. In fact, it's quite the opposite. He's leaving justice to God. Do you see that? Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. He's not saying, let me do it. What's he doing? He's trusting that even in the context of a hostile environment, his God, who knows him completely, would deal justly with him and them. Now that's a trust for every day, isn't it? And then he gets to this lovely expression of a prayer in verses 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Why would you pray for something you know is already true? You've searched me, verse 1, and known me. And here we are again. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Why? Christian life is relationship, isn't it? There's never one point where we're fixed and sorted and complete. It's relationship. All the time. Search me, O God, and know my heart. My mind. My will. The things I choose. My affections. The things that I love and desire. Hate and abhor. Know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties and see if there's any wicked way in me. Why does David pray that? Why would he expose himself willingly and gladly to God when there's so much to fear of what's in there? Because he knows that God will lead him in the way everlasting. Do you see? Which means you have a shepherd, Christian. We have a shepherd who can take all the surprises of the darkened heart and the hostility that remains but doesn't reign any longer. He can take it all and still lead us through with him, with the help of others, to home. To be with him forever. You will have problems with your heart. Thoughts, decisions, longings, your conscience. At points these things will not work as you want them to. And there'll be times that you don't want them to work as they're supposed to. Christian, you have a God who is greater than your heart. I would plead with you. Pray verses 23 and 24. Pray knowing that he is trustworthy. That when you pray this, it's a fatherly care that you're placing yourself under. So you're safe and secure. That he will teach you what is in your heart. And there may be pain along the way as you learn. But that's not a bad thing. That testing, the trying in this version, is a metal being purified through fire. That's not an easy picture, is it? There'll be pain there. but his hands are safe, and you are secure, and he's greater than your heart. Where else would you be? Who else can you trust? What else could you ask for? The known heart. Aren't we glad? Glad that we're known completely. Glad we can trust him totally. What a God.